Thank you, Heavenly Father, that you have given us your Sabbath, that you gave Israel your Sabbath, and that you have set us apart to you from all the nations. Father, I pray that you will be here with us all in this room and in the ears and hearts and of the understanding of people who hear this recording afterwards, that maybe you have given me something to say that will touch them and they will learn and see more and understand more of your word in this year's Torah cycle. And Father, I pray that, and I do this every week, I know this and I ask you the same thing every week, but I pray that if it's my words, that they fail and they fall to the ground, wither and die and blow away, and no one remembers them. But if it's your word, I pray that the people will hear your word and understand your word, that it will grow in their hearts and flourish, and that none of your words will ever go away. I pray that your word will remain forever. In Yeshua's name, amen. Okay, I'm going to start with Matthew 4:23. And Yeshua went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all kinds of sicknesses and all kinds of disease among the people. Well, in this Torah portion, the Israelites that were rescued from Egypt about 2 months ago, that's their time. It's taken them about 2 months now to get where they are. They are about to be, crown their king and vow to be his people following his law. This is the kingdom coming in their time. They've been freed from Egyptian oppression and a law that mandated their continual abuse to one that makes them a free people, Yahweh's law. Matthew 11:28 says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Well, in that time, Judah's laws were the hard yoke. In the time of this first generation, Egypt's laws were the hard yoke. And the people must now find the way to shift their paradigm from slave to free and accept righteousness and justice instead of wickedness and abuse. So what is the foundation of Yahweh's kingdom? Psalms 89:14-15 tells us, "Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Loving kindness and truth go before your face. Blessed are the people who know the joyful sound, the teruah, the shofar sound made at the Feast of Trumpets." That's my interpolation there of the joyful sound. "And they walk in the light of your presence, Yahweh. No other nation on earth has ever claimed that righteousness and justice are its foundation. Even the U.S. Constitution, which is critically acclaimed as unique in the history of the earth, claims the equality of all men as its foundation, not righteousness and justice. The final generation must make the same choice as the first one. Like that first generation that backed away from the mountain, however, we still have those who are backing away from the Torah." Before we started with this service, we were talking about those from within the Hebrew roots who convert to Judaism. Well, it's been happening for the last 10-15 years that people who have been in Hebrew roots go back to the church as well. And so it happens that from year to year, that situations happen with the Torah cycle. And as you know, last week I learned about some people who have decided to not study the Torah this year. You know, they say, well, we've been there, done that, and we're tired of going over the same material year after year without getting anything from it. They say love is missing from the Torah, and they are now going to study Revelation, and then they're going to go to the Gospels. Well, I believe they're missing the boat and are in the same heart frame and mindset of that first generation who received the letter of the law but failed to mature into the spirit of it because of their hard hearts. The Torah is designed to circumcise the heart and kill the flesh. But when the heart is hard, the eyes can't see the justice and mercy built into the Torah. They see rules, letter of the law. So, after several annual rounds of Torah portions, when they think they have not learned anything, they are right. They have not learned anything. And they have not matured spiritually as they should. Now, I have been accused many times over the years of loving the Torah too much. Yep. Yep, I have. But here is why I love the Torah so much. And by the way, I love that the whole book of Psalms, the book with the most chapters of the Bible, starts this way. And I'm going to share how it starts here in a minute. But the entire book of Psalms is about loving the law of Yahweh and dealing with implementing it in our personal and national circumstances. But here is how the book of Psalms starts. Psalm 1:1. Blessed is the man who has not walked in the counsel of the ungodly and has not stood in the way of sinners and has not sat in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is only in the law of Yahweh, and in his law he meditates day and night. The result of delighting in the Torah is spiritual growth, which leads to the intimate relationship with Yeshua that we need, so we never hear these words, "Depart from me, those who work lawlessness," Matthew 7:23. This is what doing Yahweh's law does for us in Psalms 1:3. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. Delighting in the commandment, in the law, or the precepts is mentioned an additional 8 times in Psalms. Those who say Paul destroyed the law haven't read this passage written by him of himself where he says, "I delight in the law of God after the inward man." Paul understood that the law has to become part of us inwardly. He understood that there is a spirit of the law, and he taught about that. We're gonna talk about that a little bit more. But we are to delight in the law so much that we teach its commandments diligently to our children. Talk of them when we are just sitting around like, okay, let's replace that. Let's get rid of the TV and YouTube and let's talk about the law instead. Talk of the law when we are just walking around outside or inside, when we go to bed and when we get up in the morning, according to Deuteronomy 6, 7 through 9. With no other book of the Bible are we commanded to do this. With anything else that's written in the whole Bible, we're not commanded to do with any of that what we're commanded to do with the law, which is to have it with us and talk about it every single day. That commandment applies only to the law of Moses. It's to be our delight. Yahweh says doing this will mean to him that we love him with all of our hearts, and we will know he is one Yahweh, so that later on, when the Son of God comes to fulfill the law, we won't try to separate them and say the Son did away with the law because the Father was too harsh on his people. And if you've never heard that from the pulpit, I have. The annual Torah portions are important for our understanding and our maturing, but they are more important for our identity as Israelites. One thing the Jews did get right was the Torah portion cycle. Now, they had the Torah portion cycle even before Yeshua came, and so he followed that cycle. The Torah portions helped the Jews through the Greek and Roman occupations, even keeping them together as a culture during 2,000 years of dispersion. Excuse me. The Torah portions and the Hillel 2 calendar held them together and gave them an identity so that when Yahweh whistled for their return, they knew who they were and they returned. Furthermore, the law converts our souls. Psalms 19:7. The law of Yahweh is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making wise the simple. The Hebrew word for converted is shub. It's where we get the word teshuvah. It means to turn back. We are turned back to Yahweh through doing his law. It is the doing that results in spiritual maturity. In nine total Old Testament scriptures, the law and turning back are mentioned together. I've got those listed. You can see them when I post this. But Yahweh's people would not do that. They didn't want to do it when it started, and 3,500 years later, Yahweh's people don't want to do it. But I have to ask you a question. Why is it important for us to be converted? It is so that we will be fit citizens to enter his kingdom when he arrives. And this conversion is a process that takes time, probably a lifetime. But as we mature, things get easier for us. But conversion also requires us to have a schoolmaster. People want to leave the Torah and study from the back of the book without understanding that what Yeshua taught in the Gospels is the mature understanding of the law, what we call the spirit of the law. We gain the spirit of the law first by following the letter of the law, the schoolmaster. And as we walk in the law, Yahweh fills up our understanding. A spiritually immature person cannot understand the lessons taught by the master. His instructions will seem like good sayings and parables, but the comprehension will be missing. The spirit of the law requires a circumcised heart, which requires walking in the law, doing those things that we don't understand the reason for, and which sometimes makes our flesh unhappy. Deuteronomy 30, verse 1. And it shall happen, when all these things have come on you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you shall call them to mind among all the nations where Yahweh your God has driven you, and you return to Yahweh your God and obey his voice according to all that I command you today, you and your children, with all your heart and with all your soul, that then Yahweh your God will release you from captivity, have compassion on you, and will return and gather you from all the peoples where Yahweh your God has scattered you. Being released from captivity is not just a physical thing, though. It is a state of inner being thing as well. to be released from the hold that the world and our flesh has on us. We must return with our whole heart, delighting in the law, the only thing besides the Lord that we have been commanded to delight in, and do all that we can instead of trying to figure out how to do the least and get away with it if we want to be gathered to the kingdom. The heart that wants to do the utmost and the one that wants to do the least are two different kinds of hearts. One wants to please Yahweh and grow in spirit and in faith. The other wants to please itself and justify its own fleshly desires. The letter of the law is the schoolmaster that Paul teaches about. The kingdom perspective is that the spirit of the law is what is written on our heart. We must all sit under the schoolmaster, as I said before, mostly for our entire lives. We can slip backwards too easily. But after some time passes in our walk, we'll find ourselves doing the law automatically, and we'll slip less and less, whereas in the beginning, we slip a lot. In other words, we will more and more operate in the spirit of the law. Now, does that mean the letter of the law will be gone once we are walking in its spirit? No. It means that our wrong perspective will be gone. Nothing of the law will ever pass away, but our flesh will, one way or another. Either our flesh will pass away through our voluntary cooperation with the conversion process that leads to eternal life, or it will pass away through stubbornness that leads to eternal death. Studying Yahweh's law puts us face to face with Him because His Torah is Him. Yeshua is the Torah made flesh. The Torah describes Yahweh in every detail, and it is the law that helps to remake us in His image. It renews our mind if we delight in it and do it. It is through His law that we know and are intimate with our King, and is how we demonstrate our love for Him and our desire to please Him. 1 John 2:3. This is how we know that we know Him, if we keep His commandments. One who says, "I know Him," and doesn't keep His commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps His word, God's love has most certainly been perfected in him. This is how we know that we are in Him. He who says he remains in Him ought himself also to walk just like He walked. Yeshua's New Testament commentary on loving God and loving each other is not new in the New Testament. It is the two sections of the Torah which detail and govern our behavior toward God and people. You know, we sometimes hear the question, what would Jesus do? Well, He would follow the law. In fact, that is what He did when He laid down His life for us. It is the spirit of the law to lay our life down when Yahweh asks us to, and to lay it down for other people. Backing away from the law was the first generation's Mount Sinai reaction that led them to only having the letter of the law. Those who say the law is harsh and hard and it scares and makes them uncomfortable and unhappy have hearts like the first generation. And it breaks my heart when people say they get nothing out of studying the law, that it's the same thing over and over every year, and they don't learn and gain more understanding for their walk. Simply, they don't delight in what Yahweh delights in. He delights in His law and His people, who delight themselves in His law. So this Torah portion, Yitro, brings us to the inauguration of the Kingdom of Israel, with a king, a people, and a land. And with that comes the need for laws to govern it all. There is no country on earth ever that does not have law. It is only Yahweh's law that is easy and the burden light, however. And herein lies a point. Yahweh never said his law is not a burden. He said his burden is light. So if we are finding his law too heavy to handle, the problem is not with the law, it is with us. The problem is not how to get rid of the law, but how to get rid of our flesh. Exodus 19:5. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession from among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Notice that the first prerequisite of being a citizen of Israel is to obey his commandments. If makes the law the condition for his people to continue being Israelites. Obedience is a requirement of citizenship, and they didn't obey, and all 12 tribes got exiled from the kingdom. The last four were exiled when Yeshua died on the cross. Also notice that the priesthood is a kingdom priesthood, not a religious priesthood. This is a priesthood that serves a king and the king's people. They are administrators of the king's government. Exodus 19:7. Moses came and called for the elders of the people and set before them all these words which Yahweh commanded him. All the people answered together and said, "All that Yahweh has spoken we will do." Moses reported the words of the people to Yahweh. So that first generation accepted Yahweh's proposal, which made every generation afterward liable for keeping the law, whether you're a natural born or you are a Gentile and you come in of your own volition. Exodus 19:9. Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, I come to you in a thick cloud that the people may hear when I speak with you and may also believe you forever." And Moses told the words of the people to Yahweh. So Yahweh will now come to them in a thick cloud and with definite boundaries around his throne. This verse and elsewhere in Exodus 18:20 and chapter 24, verse 12, also establishes why we call Yahweh's law the law of Moses. This is Moses' reward for acting in the capacity of ambassador to Pharaoh and then leader of the people going into the wilderness and then the deliverer of the law. Exodus 19:10, Yahweh said to Moses, "Go to the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow and let them wash their garments." Well, at some future time, this will happen again. Revelation 7:14, I told him, "My Lord, you know," this is when the angel or the messenger appeared to John. He said, "My Lord, you know," the answer to the question that had been asked him. And he said to me, "These are those who came out of the great tribulation. They washed their robes and made them white in the lamb's blood." So this is going to happen at a future generation where they are going to separate themselves, and this next time when they accept the law, they're going to do it wholeheartedly. Exodus 19:11 says, "And be ready against the third day, for on the third day Yahweh will come down in the sight of all the people on Mount Sinai." Well, on the third day, Yahweh will come down, and this is a prophecy. Hosea 6:2 says, After 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will raise us up and we will live before him. The third day from Yeshua's resurrection will coincide with the start of the seventh millennium. Exodus 19:12. You shall set bounds to the people all around, saying, Be careful that you don't go up to the mountain or touch its border. Whoever touches the border shall be surely put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through. Whether it is animal or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they shall come up to the mountain. So there is an automatic death penalty for encroachment into Yahweh's space, both literally and figuratively. But what else is going on here? Well, this is a wedding ceremony, and the bride does not touch the groom during the ceremony. Also, this, and probably equally or more important, this ceremony is not about any individual alone. It is for the entire congregation as a whole. All of the people must come together as one. And we find this being prayed about by Yeshua in John 17, 20 and 21. He says to his Father, And I do not pray for these alone, he's praying for the disciples, but for those also who shall believe on me through their word, through the disciples' word, that they all may be one as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be one in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. So Yeshua, before his death, prayed for the unity of Israel, the king, and the people to be united, because our king and his father are united, and we join with the king and his father, and that is what was supposed to happen at Mount Sinai. So here in John 17, he's praying that same thing again. So moving forward, renewed Israel will be once again one 12-tribed kingdom united with Yahweh, our Elohim. The ceremony at Mount Sinai was to unite the congregation with God, not to choose one person to be united with God. The one who does not understand this must die. The unification of the entire congregation with Yahweh is why all Israelites are equal. No citizen of Israel is better than another or more important than another. Exodus 20, verse 1. God spoke all these words, saying, I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Well, what is the spirit behind this declaration? And yes, it is a commandment and is for the congregation an identity statement. Yahweh is doing for the congregation what he did for Moses at the burning bush. He's telling him who he is at the burning bush. Here, he's telling the congregation who he is. The spirit of this is that if you don't know who has brought you out of Egypt, who has brought you salvation from the world, the rest won't even matter. This is also the commandment that tells us he expected them to make personal relationships with him. Knowing who he is gives us the required credentials that we need to receive his word and enter into his kingdom. Receiving the word happens when we're entering into his kingdom. And here is the paradigm shift that Yahweh's people fail to make. People think of the law as restrictions. But these are not restrictions. They're elevations. They set us apart from the nations and elevate us. Verse 3, You shall have no other gods before me. His holiness is why we are to have no other gods before his face. And the letter of the law means to stay away from idolatry. But what is the spirit of it? To take Yahweh alone to yourself, to have and to hold from this day forward, keeping ourselves only unto him, because he will be always only unto us. In fact, he will love Israel so much that he will die to restore her to her original pristine state, so that all the whosoevers will have a nation to enter into when they make that choice. Exodus 20 verse 4. You shall not make to yourself any graven image, pestle, or any likeness, tumuna, of anything that is in the heavens above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not do what the nations do. You are elevated and will receive what the nations cannot, which is direct access to Yahweh. Thus, you shall not assaw, make, produce, prepare, deal with, attend to, acquire, celebrate, appoint, or use images. Those words describe what assaw means. The word pesel is wrongly translated as statue in English. The pe and samek in pesel are mouth, pe, without a voice, samek, of an el, a god. A voiceless mouthed god is what Yahweh calls the demon deities. You shall not make likeness of voiceless mouthed gods, idols. And then there are all the other kinds of images which are not used as idols, the voiceless mouthed gods, that fall under the category of tumuna. Tumuna is simply image of any kind, the same that the word icon today. We understand that icon is one word under which comes all kinds of different kinds of images. It encompasses 3D images and 2D images, you know, statues and portraits and such. Egypt's non-religious images, and Egypt had many, many non-religious images, were attributes to the pharaohs, the mighty Egyptian military. They depicted daily life in Egypt and were even used to shame Egypt's slaves. Teraphim, images of family members who they believed had then become gods after their death, were found in Egypt. The same imagery stuff of today in popular culture worldwide. Images usurp the copyright owned by Yahweh. There is nothing of creation that belongs to a human being. Therefore, it is unlawful to steal Yahweh's creation by making an image of it and then saying it is yours when the original belongs to someone else. Yahweh can do what he wants with his creation, even using images for his purpose, but we cannot. And there is more that we are not to do with images. We are not to bow or prostrate before them. Exodus 20, verses 5 and 6. You shall not bow yourself down to them, nor serve them. For I, Yahweh, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the sons to the third and fourth generation of those that hate me, and showing mercy to thousands of those that love me and keep my commandments. Yahweh says if we physically bow or prostrate to an image, we hate him. He also says if we serve an image, we hate him. His people mingle these two words, these two things together as one thing and call it worship. Well, bowing or prostration is the outward sign of worship, but serving is not of that same kind. So how were images served in the ancient nations? And actually the same way today in some instances. Well, the people fed their images. They watered them, they gave them water, gave them wine, bathed them if it was a statue, and they clothed them. They prayed to and even talked to their images. So this is the letter of the law regarding images, but what is the spirit behind the prohibition of all images? Well, I mentioned it already. First, it sets us apart. It elevates us above all the other people as a people with direct access to our God and King, such that Gentiles do not have with their gods and kings. Their access comes through images. Our access is direct, which makes the privilege that we have to be coveted by the Gentiles, by the heathen who use images to get to their God. And second, this commandment protects us from both image worship and idolatry throughout the ages, and particularly at the end of the age when Yahweh will test Israel again with the image of the beast to see who will serve the image and who will not. If we do not follow what Satan sets before our eyes, we will not be deceived. Those are the spirit behind the prohibition of images, elevation and protection of the relationship between us and Yahweh. Exodus 20, verse 7, "You shall not take the name of Yahweh your God in vain." Excuse me, "for Yahweh will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." The Hebrew word for vain is shav. It means emptiness, vanity, falsehood, nothingness, lying, and worthless conduct. We are not to make Yahweh's name empty, worthless, or meaningless by our own unrighteous, lawless conduct. So don't rebel against his law and then still claim you're one of his family or a servant or a citizen of his kingdom. And what is the spirit behind this commandment? Well, it is to protect the reputation of Yahweh, to protect the reputation of his name. It protects him and his kingdom. So here's the caveat. With the images prohibition, he protects us. With this commandment, we protect him. Exodus 20, verse 8. "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your cattle, your stranger within your gates. For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and sanctified it." The letter of this law is to cease all work on the seventh day. But the spirit of this law has a deeper purpose. Keeping the Sabbath means we agree with Yahweh that he is the creator of everything. Thus, we do what our God and King does. And second, keeping this commandment is for a continual reminder of who we serve. Exodus 31:13. "Speak also to the sons of Israel, saying, truly, you shall keep my Sabbaths," plural, "for it," the keeping of all the Sabbaths, "it," all the Sabbaths, "is a sign between me and you throughout your generations to know that I am Yahweh who sanctifies you." Humans need constant reminders, and the Sabbaths were given to Israel so that Israel would be often aware of who we are and who we serve. We need to know he is Yahweh. You know, he knows he is Yahweh. We need to know he is Yahweh. And rejecting the Torah cycle is one way that we can go ahead and forget who we are and who he is. Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long upon the land which Yahweh your God gives you. Now, you have probably heard that this is the commandment with a promise, and that is the letter of the law. But what is the spirit of this law? Well, it is for us to respect the two people who are to us on earth what Yahweh is for us in heaven. How we treat our parents reflects on our relationship with Yahweh. If we dishonor them, we will probably dishonor Yahweh. Exodus 20, verse 13, you shall not murder. Now, there are seven Hebrew words for killing. The letter of this law has to do with not taking away the physical life of a person. But the spirit of the law says there is another way to kill someone, as Yeshua pointed out in Matthew 5:22, when he tells us that our anger towards someone without cause will put us in danger of his judgment. The word ratzak, murder, also means to assassinate. Anger without cause can spew forth to others as character assassination, murdering of the character. That is something that a person who's had their character assassinated almost never overcomes with the one that assassinates them. Exodus 20:14, you shall not commit adultery. Well, this commandment involves not breaking up a marriage, but the spirit behind it is idolatry. Physical adultery is unfaithfulness to our wedded partner, but idolatry is unfaithfulness to Yahweh. You shall not steal. Simply, do not take anything that is not your possession. But the spirit of the law also is to not steal people's dignity or the justice that is due them within Yahweh's judicial system either. Exodus 20, verse 16, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, this isn't just about lying under oath. That's the letter of the law. But it is any time that we lie about someone, whether under oath or not. The spirit of this is compassion toward and protection of others, both in a witness situation under oath, where we need only tell the truth. This commandment then protects everyone from all the harm that comes from disobeying it. Exodus 20:17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Coveting starts in the uncircumcised and hard heart, and it can lead to planning how to either steal someone's possessions or otherwise get your hands on their stuff. And we are not to plan or imagine such things. Coveting is evidence of jealousy, selfishness, and pride. Yeshua has an answer for coveting. It's found in Matthew 6:25. Therefore I say to you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, not for your body, what you shall put on it. Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? So as you can see, it doesn't take much to get to the spirit of the law. And it does us good to go through the Torah every year so we can be reminded of things that we humans so easily forget and not end up backsliding. Exodus 20:18. And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw, they trembled and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, "You speak with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us lest we die." Well, there's a true statement if ever there was one. Because speaking with God face to face, you know what's going to die? Your flesh, your inner spirit, your spirit will die, and his will fill you, and you will live. But they didn't see that. And Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and so that his fear may be before your faces, so that you may not sin." And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. So already there's a problem. Not only have the Israelites been complaining to Moses about Moses, God, you know, they don't even dare to complain to God's face, but now they don't want to hear his word, or more importantly, receive his spirit, the same spirit that he would give 1500 years later. You know, he has plan A, and he's going to have plan A. And plan A was there at Mount Sinai. I want to give you my spirit. I want to put the spirit that I have given to Moses, I want to give that to you. Well, they weren't going to have it, and it waited 1500 years, but it's plan A. You know, the flesh does not like Yahweh's word or his spirit. The last generation is worse than the first. We must be careful to be obedient so we can enter the kingdom. Because the law is our path of righteousness. No unrighteousness can inherit the kingdom. The Moses generation backed up from Yahweh at the mountain, but they would at least hear what Moses had to say. This last generation, the Jesus generation, doesn't even want to hear what Moses has to say. If we cannot stand hearing what Yeshua, the Torah made flesh, has to say now, how can we claim we will hear and do what he says when we finally get into his kingdom? I leave you with that question.